Welcome to Tardi Mecha Nachyomi. My name is Adina Schmidman. We find ourselves in exceedingly challenging times. In an effort to connect daily through tefillah and learning, please sign up to join the OU Tehillim call at 1 p.m. Eastern at ou.org/tehillimcall. May our tefillos and learning be a schus for the safe and speedy return of our captives, for the healing of our wounded, the safety of our brothers and sisters in Eretz Yisrael, and help to protect all those fighting on the front lines. And now for today's perek.
Welcome to Torah Timecha Nachyomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Esther Wien, and today we're studying Megillat Esther, perek 5. Okay, continuing our drama. Esther chooses creator mode, and she decides to put her life at risk and try to turn the tables, and she has quite the plan. And she is going to set up a very stark contest between her and Haman. It's either Esther and Esther's nation, and essentially demanding that Ahasuerus renege and turn his back and repudiate Haman, or Ahasuerus is going to choose Haman and wipe out Esther and all her people. It's black and white. It's all or nothing. There is no middle here. And Esther is setting this up. Now, Haman does not know what's going on. And again, remember who Haman is. Haman is all of what can be included in the world of sheker and fantasy and evil. And the worst, ultimately worst forms of survival mode delusion that the perpetrator imagines that the world is according to how they see things, and they have the right to impose their will on everyone to the point that there is nothing besides themselves, and they are the center of all things, and they deserve to be worshipped and get their needs met and be indulged, and no one else matters. Okay. But Haman, sheker, the ultimate sheker, that there is nothing but the world as I see it, and that represents the truth and the only truth, that sheker bubble is going to get bigger and bigger and bigger, and like all big bubbles, it's going to pop. But he doesn't know it yet. And not only does he not know it, the Torah is clear, the Megillah is clearly writing in a way to teach us how it looks when someone doesn't know. When a person is deep in survival mode and they're justifying everything they do and they're enraged at everybody that opposes them, what it looks like, how foolish, how absolutely, utterly foolish it is, because you cannot ultimately tamper with, you cannot ultimately undermine the big picture that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has in play. So, Vayomer HaMelech, Parak 5. I'm sorry, Vayomer Haman. Esther has not invited anyone to this feast that she's having with the king except me. And I'm also invited for tomorrow. He says, I'm so powerful, right? But all of this, Chol zeh eina shavali, doesn't mean a thing to me as long as I see Mordechai sitting in the gate. I can't handle the fact that there is one person, that there is anyone in existence that doesn't see things the way I see them. I cannot handle anyone who says to me, you have no authority. Your will doesn't matter. You cannot decide what's right and wrong. I cannot tolerate that. So you know what Zeresh, his wife, said? I used to be an ultrasound tech, and I once had a patient, and her name was Zeresh. I said, you don't want to know where that name comes from, do you? Anyway, she says to him, listen to this. Yasu eitz. Oh, go make an eitz. An eitz. We're talking about the eitz. The Megillah is referencing the eitz adas. Oh, go make yourself an eitz. Hang yourself on the same tree that you are coming from. Right? Go make yourself an eitz. And it's going to be 50 Amma. It's going to be 50, and that's a very important magical number. mystical number. And in the morning, tell the king, La Melech. Okay, that's Melech. Remember when it's not Melech Achashverosh, we're talking about Hashem. Okay, and he's going to hang Mordechai. And then you're going to go with the king to the party. Sameach, happy. Vayitav hadavar lefnei Haman. Haman thought this was a great idea. Vayas ha'etz. He made the tree. Now, what's going on here? Haman really believes that survival mode mentality, where we blind out everything other than our truth, believes that they are God. And they are even empowered by God. They are a mini God. Hitler used to end every single speech, "Zu willst Gott," as God wills. They delude themselves that they're doing God's work, the Melech's work. That this is the way, you know, Hitler used to say, and Hitler, it's the same idea. Hitler used to say that God made humanity in his image. And to have human beings that are inferior is a violation of the Tzelem Elokim, of the image of God himself. And it was Hitler's privilege and divine calling to eliminate these lower, inferior creatures so that only humans who are truly represent the perfect God can stay in the world. Of course, those would be the Aryans. He killed the mentally ill first. In fact, yeah, well, anyway, Lubavitcher Rebbe had a brother, unfortunately, who was in an institution at some sort of issue, mental illness. He was murdered by the Nazis right in the beginning, way before he got to all the Jews. So he says, oh, yes, this is a good idea. The king would even like this idea that I'm going to get rid of Mordechai. That's how deluded it gets. And he goes and he builds himself an eitz. Now, we know eventually, Vayitlu et Haman al ha'etz. See, they're going to hang him on the tree. Of course, the Megillah is telling us, the survival mode mentality is utterly self-destructive. But here now, it is time to take a look at the bright side of the survival mode bubble. You see, Kadosh Baruch Hu built a system. The system is that there's a reality called the Mitziut, and it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu revealed to Am Yisrael, and by extension to the world, that there is a great reality, a Ruchnius, a non-physical reality that we are all part of. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Mitziut, or reality, works a certain way. There are certain forces in play. They're known as Chesed and Gevura, and the blend of both of them. And Netzach, and these are called the Sphiros, the Kabbalistic names, but they're Kadosh Baruch Hu put forces in play, which are the forces that translate into how everything unfolds down here in the material world. And so, when a person tries to invent their own truths and says, no, we don't have to live by MS, I could cheat and steal because that's what I want to do, and there's no one to stop me, and I'm going to get my needs met, or I'm going to break up people's marriages and backstab them in the back and destroy their parnassa because that's going to help me get what I want or get ahead. There's no rules, right? So a person starts tampering with the system. See, survival mode is when a person starts making up their own rules, but when you make up your own rules, you say, there are no other rules. So let's give a mushel. We all know now, science knows already, that we should not totally drown our bodies in sugar, correct? We shouldn't like drink soda all day, every day, right? So let's say somebody says, but I want to because I feel like it and sugar tastes good to me and I don't really care about anything else because that's what I want right now. So they start just overindulging. So what happens? The body's not designed like that. And eventually, they'll get sick. God forbid, diabetes or other issues. They'll get sick. The sickness is not a punishment. You can't tamper with the system. There's a way that things work. Okay? When we tamper with the system, there are ramifications. Things start malfunctioning. Okay, but that's the beauty. It's only when the malfunction sets in, when a person gets sick, that they say, oh no, I have a choice now. I gotta really decide. Should I keep this habit going, or should I, you know, stop myself and try to shift myself into a different, you know, a better way, a better path. Stop eating all that sugar. So it's the fact that survival mode decisions, death-bound thinking, fear and desire gripping us and leading us to put our own needs first. The beauty of it is it's self-limiting because there are terrible ramifications and they start coming back to bite us in relationships, in business, in health, in every way. And then that makes us stop in our tracks and say, oh, no, if I proceed down this path, it's going to kill me. I can't do this. So the beauty is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu built a self-correcting system. Look at what's going on in the world today. People in survival mode are prone to every afflictive state of mind. Anger, jealousy, depression, anxiety. Because, hey, if you're just trying to survive, those are very legitimate feelings, right? Always putting my own needs first, narcissism, right? What happens? Well, it doesn't work well, not in business, not in relationships, not in health. So then what happens? Well, there's a multi-gazillion dollar treatment, therapy, rehab business for all the people that say, I can't live like this anymore. This is too painful. I need anger management. I need drug rehab. I need alcohol rehab. My relationships are broken. I can't take it, right? The beauty is that we hate being in survival mode. It's absolutely miserable, and we recognize that it's totally self-destructive, and we start desperately seeking ways to get ourselves out of it. That's the beauty. So what's happening here? But that's 99% of humanity. HaKadosh Baruch Hu set it up like that. But there is that ultimately worst, extreme form of that Eitz Hadas sin, that subjective reality, my good, my bad, the way things seem to me with my physical eyes open, looking around my world, making my own decisions about what I need to do for myself. Right? The worst is when a person sinks so deep into that place that they can't even feel it coming back at them. And they can't even feel things when they start malfunctioning. They can't even recognize how much this is going to come back to destroy them. And they just dig themselves deeper and deeper into it. Now that's reserved for the worst. You know, we're talking about the Hitlers of the world. We have to see the big picture of history to look at how this comes back. And to ultimately implode upon those that are perpetuating this type of idea. We have to look at the big picture. It's not good enough that Berlin was bombed to smithereens, and that isn't good enough. There's a big picture that hasn't fully unfolded. But in the Purim story, which is a glimpse at the light at the end of the historic tunnel, we're going to see a different situation. And that's when the evil or the sheker does implode upon itself. And the fact that the Jewish people have stayed strong post-Holocaust, that we built a country and Torah and yeshivas and religious life is exploding and flourishing and absolutely, you know, expanding beyond anybody's wildest dreams, is just a miracle that shows that Am Yisrael, we so deeply imbued the lessons of our chinuch years, that there's a bigger picture, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is with us, that there's a proper way to live, that nothing, not even a Holocaust can get in our way. It's an absolute miracle to see what Am Yisrael has done post-Holocaust, and the ultimate testimony to the fact that like Esther, even in Hester Panim, our attachment to the truth will prevail over the worst forms of the survival mode evil that people try to perpetrate against us. But in any case, here's the story of Haman, who is so deep in, like an addiction that you can't even see his eyes, his lens has been so utterly distorted. He cannot see the doom clouds gathering. And he goes and he builds himself his own Eitz. He goes back to the Eitz Hadas and he's about to hang himself on it, as we know. So stay tuned. Thank you for learning and studying together. Le'ilei Nishmas, Rose Foreman, Razel, Rachel Bat Aryeh Leib, and Rachel Zeitlin, Rachel Bat Shlomo.